Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning and welcome to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, and every Wednesday at 11 o'clock, as you know, because you're listening, we have a conversation about my favorite subject, and that's taste. Actually, we have a conversation about taste writ large, and today we're talking about scale, and I'm very excited to have with me on location at TEDx Manhattan in the Time Center, Myra Goodman, who is a co-founder of something that is probably in your fridge right now, Earthbound Farms. I know it's in my fridge. They are the largest producer in North America, most likely the world, of organic produce. And that is saying something. So welcome to the show, Myra. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thanks for having me here.
We're here for a couple of reasons. One is you are giving a fabulous talk about the importance of organics at scale, I would say, as part of TEDx, but also because you have a new cookbook out. And I want to talk about both of those things. But first, I want people to hear the story of how Earthbound Farms came to be, a girl born and raised in Brooklyn, or born in Brooklyn anyway, becoming one of the most influential organic farmers in California. How did that come about?
Well, I'm definitely a very unlikely farmer and cookbook author. I was born in Brooklyn in 1963, before Brooklyn was cool. You were embarrassed to have been born in Brooklyn when I was born in Brooklyn. And I moved to Manhattan for high school. And basically, I ended up at UC Berkeley studying international relations. And before I went to graduate school, I had the opportunity to move on to this little farm in Carmel Valley with my boyfriend at the time, now my husband, Drew, and farm the raspberries to support ourselves and do some improvements on the farm in exchange for rent.
Okay, but there was there a vision of an organic farm? There probably wasn't an organic farm. I mean, the organics were just a new area, weren't they, at that time?
Yeah, so what it was for me, okay, I grew up, my mom's from Hungary. I grew up on TV dinners because she believed the commercials that they were a perfect, well-balanced meal. We didn't have fresh produce in our house. Our freshest produce was frozen spinach. And, wow. And back then, it was in a cardboard box, and you had to peel it off and boil it. There were no microwaves yet.
Those were the days.
So really, I did not grow, and there wasn't a lot of information out there about how food was produced back in the early 60s, you know, when I was growing up. And so, in the 70s, when I was growing up, too. So when we landed on this farm, it was a conventional farm, and we basically got a crash course from the outgoing farmer, and how he taught us to farm is these are the fumigants, and these are the times of year that you apply them. This is how you apply them. This is the herbicide. This is how you apply it. This is the fertilizer. This is how you mix it and how you put it in the drip line to fertilize the plant. And we nodded and took notes, and he left. And then it became time for us to use these chemicals, and we really just had no idea that these toxic chemicals were what were used to produce our food. And when we were the ones that were supposed to handle them, apply them in our backyard farm and eat food grown with them, it really scared us.
Wow.
And so it was just this intuitive sense that we should be able to farm in harmony with this beautiful, bountiful earth that we were living on and not try and conquer her with chemicals that we knew couldn't be healthy for us.
So you touch on a lot of things, I think, that are on people's minds and that people often find confusing. And I'd love to tease them out because obviously a lot happened from the time you decided you didn't want to get your hands literally messed up with those chemicals into growing organic berries at first, which is ironic because I understand they're very difficult to, one of the most difficult things to grow organically is berries. Is that true?
Well, you know, strawberries are more difficult because of diseases. That's why a lot of the strawberry growers use methyl bromide, those fumigants, and now they're trying to phase that out, and there's other fumigants. Raspberries, honestly, you know, my husband and I, kids from New York, Carmel Valley is a very forgiving place to farm, and raspberries are pretty forgiving. Okay. Otherwise, we would not be here today.
Okay, so thanks for setting the record straight. But first and foremost, I think what sometimes people forget is organics is about the environment and about the workers as much as it's about the quality or the healthfulness of the food. At least that was my understanding. Correct me if I'm wrong. Part of the origins of the movement that we were dumping all of this crap literally into our environment, and that wasn't good for anybody. And then ultimately, we're consuming the food that comes from that. But that's almost secondary, or do I have that backwards in your mind, in your perspective about the healthfulness versus the environmental impact of organic farming?
Well, you know, it's interesting because most people choose organic and spend the extra money for organic for self-preservation.
Right.
They don't want to ingest these chemicals. And originally, it was very intuitive, just like me and Drew 30 years ago, kill insects couldn't be healthy to ingest. And now there are really a lot of studies that support that. But that's the biggest motivator for choosing organic. But the environmental impacts of conventional farming versus organic farming are huge.
Right.
And in a lot of the ways, that's actually the most supportable. Because there's debate, is organic more nutritious or less nutritious? There's debate, well, if the residues of pesticides on your food are below the government standards for them, are they harmful or not? But in terms of the impact on the environment, that's very quantifiable.
Okay. And another thing that I hear is that, and this just happened the other day, I was sitting at lunch, and people have come to be so skeptical about what our food is labeled that someone at the table I was with at a random lunch just dismissed organic as another thing like natural and whatever and meaningless. And I stood there and said, no, that's actually not true. Of all the labels on foods, organic is probably the most meaningful, the most regulated, the most true. Is that your sense also?
Oh, definitely. I mean, the USDA has been regulating organic food since 2002, and there are strict and enforced standards for organic food. And right now, when you buy something organic, you know not only was it grown without toxic and persistent chemicals, but there were no GMO seeds used to produce the food. If it's a processed food, no genetically modified ingredients, no artificial flavors, no artificial colors, no artificial preservatives, no artificial trans fats. So there's so much that you are getting when you buy organic. The term natural is completely unregulated. So it is, I mean, there's slight regulations for meat that have nothing to do with how it was produced.
Right.
But it's an unregulated term. It's completely overused. Sustainable is vague. It is unregulated. And local is unregulated. It's completely open to individual interpretation and often means absolutely nothing. They're great marketing buzzwords.
Right. So, I just want to underscore this for people listening. So, because organics, as you say in your TED Talk, are more expensive because of this oversight and because of the challenges, I guess, that you have to overcome in producing them. But on the other hand, it actually is a meaningful designation. There's something that you can point to about how this was produced that's better for the environment, that may be better for me, that's certainly better for the people producing it.
Right.
So, okay, you've got a raspberry farm. I know you're not going to put those chemicals in the ground or on yourselves or in your food. Then how do you go from that to the roadside stand to the largest purveyor of organic produce in America? It's amazing.
Yeah, we started with 2.5 acres, and now Earthbound Farms growers, we have 200 growers that farm more than 53,000 organic crop acres.
Mm-hmm.
But the story of Earthbound, how it happened, and it really happened before organics were really popular, was we were actually the first company to successfully market packaged salads for retail sales.
Wow.
And we started in 1986 putting these little baby lettuces and baby greens that are now known as spring mix into Ziploc bags and selling them in retail stores and then also in bulk to some food service
restaurants.
Funny
because when I think Earthbound Farms, I can see your label on my tub of salad or my mesclun mix or the spring mix. And it's hard, I think, probably for some people listening who aren't old enough to remember a time when there wasn't a Whole Foods, or when, if there was, the Whole Foods would not be lined with salad mixes in little plastic containers. So that's how did you do that? I mean, what was your inspiration to market that in a market that didn't exist before?
Well, so we had this little 2.5 acre farm, and this was the early 1980s, and it was right when Alice Waters started introducing baby vegetables at Chez Panisse. So, you know, little baby carrots and little turnips and little baby lettuces were showing up, and we had this teeny farm, and so there wasn't much land available, and one of the people, I was actually babysitting for a chef's son. That was part of how we supported ourselves, right. Was I was a babysitter right. In the evenings after I was working on the farm all day, and she said, you know, you could start selling these little baby lettuces for the same price as full-size heads, and you know, and they grow so quickly, and so we started planting these little baby lettuces in our backyard and selling the whole heads. They were 24 count little heads to local restaurants, and my husband and I realized that our kitchen was right, the farm was right outside our kitchen. And we realized that we would work all day, sunrise to sunset. By the end of the day, we were tired. We'd eat a frozen pizza or whatever, and we hardly ever ate our salad because we were too tired to go out, cut the lettuce, cut the different gourmet greens, wash them, and eat them. So we started on Sundays harvesting big batches of the lettuces and the greens, washing them, drying them, and put them in Ziploc bags, one for every day of the week. And we realized that when we had salad, as easy as opening a bag, we had salad every single night. We had Meyer lemon trees on our farm, so we'd make a big thing of Meyer lemon, Dijon vinaigrette, garlic, you know, vinaigrette. And then so we weren't selling this product, but while we would sit at our kitchen, both of us being from New York, we said, imagine if you could get these beautiful, fresh, gorgeous, healthy greens in Manhattan. Could you imagine how well this would sell?
Right.
And then what happened was one chef, we had this teeny farm, one chef was buying almost all of our product. And we called him every day, 6 days a week, and he would tell us what he wanted. We'd harvest them and deliver to his back door that afternoon. And one day we called, and they said, oh, he's no longer here. We have a new chef, and the new chef won't deal with any of the previous chef's purveyors. Mm. And there weren't many people using baby greens back then, so we had this field that was going to, you know, be our dinner, you know.
Right.
And we said, well, maybe we should try and market these bags. And that's how it all started.
Wow. Okay. And it's funny because when you described that, I remember having my own fantasy that I'd have just a drawer of mesclun always to pull out of, or baby lettuces of some kind, that really is a bit of a fantasy in some ways. If you love fresh vegetables and you don't, I mean, they do take some time. I happen to love also preparing vegetables, but that's amazing. Wow. So but you're much bigger than lettuce now. I mean, what do you guys produce? Everything? Is there anything you don't grow?
Well, we really do. Earthbound Farm offers a full line of organic fruits and vegetables. A lot of the crops we farm ourselves, and a lot of the crops are in partnership with other growers. So like our citrus, other growers grow for us and we market them. And now Earthbound Farm has a great line of frozen fruits and vegetables that's growing really, really quickly. And we also do these salad kits that are all vegetarian protein, and they're called Power Meals, and they're delicious. So we're expanding our product line.
So, and now that leads me to the next question, which is something that I've heard you talk about, but I think is important. And that's this question of scale. And I know that some people look at Earthbound Farms or large tract organic producers and think, well, that's not actually within the ethos of what this movement's supposed to mean or what this label's supposed to mean. And perhaps that's industrial organic farming is somehow different from small-scale local organic farming. What do you say to those people? I mean, and is there any validity to that argument from your perspective?
You know, I think that I really don't like the term industrial organic because I find that insulting.
Sure.
To me, it's not positive. I think there's large-scale, high-efficiency farming organic. And so there are farms that grow in a large scale that use sophisticated agricultural equipment that large conventional growers use so that they're able to grow large quantities of food as efficiently as possible and make this food affordable enough to sell in the the supermarkets. And so I think that when you look at big farms like Earthbound Farm, we're trying to offer an organic alternative to conventional food in the supermarket where the majority of Americans shop. And then that's a different situation than, you know, wonderful local organic farms that are growing varieties that really are too delicate, like the raspberries that we started with. When we started our farm, there were these heirloom raspberries. You had to eat them within 24 hours or they would just be mushy. Right. So, I mean, it's a whole different thing. We have a garden. We have a farm stand 2 miles from our house. I still go to the farmer's market. I think that saying that large organic farms are really beneficial for the environment, for the health of people that buy it, does not contradict the fact that there's so many benefits to local organic.
Right.
And what I get upset about is when people put local above organic, because to me the farming method, farming organically without these toxic and persistent chemicals that are dangerous for farm workers, dangerous for kids going to school nearby, that often leave residues on food that people eat, you know, that is a problem. And so for me, organic really comes first. Mm. And ideally you have a local organic farm.
And on that note, we're going to take a brief break. You're listening to Taste Matters. I'm talking with Myra Goodman, co-founder of Earthbound Farms. We'll be right back.
Today's music is Tax Star on heritageradionetwork.org.
Every Wednesday at noon, Dorothy Ken Hamilton, founder and CEO of the International Culinary Center, interviews the top chefs in the world on Chef Story. Hear from chefs like Christina Tosi.
I remember my first day as a real cook, like, I'm going to be the best pastry cook this restaurant's ever seen.
Bobby Flay.
I don't do anything on TV that I don't enjoy doing in terms of food. So whatever I'm up to in my restaurant life is what gets transferred onto TV.
Jacques Pepin.
I was invited to work at the White House for John Kennedy.
Learn how the greats become great every Wednesday at 12 p.m. on Chef Story on heritageradionetwork.org.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the heritageradionetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Welcome back to Taste Matters. I'm talking with Myra Goodman, who is a co-founder of Earthbound Farms and also co-author of Straight from the Earth, a new vegan cookbook. You are not vegan, though. Is that correct?
I am not vegan.
Okay, I love that. So why a vegan book?
It's a vegan book for omnivores, okay. And I think an omnivore writing it makes it more credible. But basically, as you know, for 30 years, I've been promoting organic food as the healthiest for people, for the planet. And as I've learned more about other ways that we can improve our personal health and also protect our planet and live more lightly on it, I've realized that eating lower on the food chain is one of the most impactful things that you can do.
Fascinating. So say more about that. What is the impact? What are we trying to avoid?
Well, okay, so when you're first of all, in terms of personal health, one thing that I learned writing this book that a dietitian would say, like, of course everybody knows that, but I didn't know that. Do you know that all cholesterol in our diet comes from animal products? There's no cholesterol in any plant foods, and all our fiber comes from plants. There's no fiber in any animal products.
Okay.
So when you decide that you are not going to make a piece of chicken or a piece of fish or a piece of steak the center of your plate, and then you need to look further and be more creative and look at different beans and different grains and different seeds, you are suddenly eating this bounty straight from the earth. I named it Straight from the Earth. The part that I didn't say is with no animal middlemen, right? So there's no animal eating these grains and turning it into milk or cheese or meat, right? No animal middlemen. You are eating so much more nutritiously, and it's just the health benefits and the range of different foods that you kind of make yourself explore as an omnivore who's used to putting that piece of animal protein at the center of your plate. It's actually very exciting.
I love that, and as a true vegetable lover who looks forward to the salad and the sides more than the main course, although I love meat, I have to say you've managed to make a vegan cookbook that makes me salivate, and that's really, the pictures, the recipes sound great. I'm still skeptical, I'll tell you that, but I want to try these things. How did you develop the recipes? Especially, I mean, are you vegan during the day, the way Mark Bittman proposes, or how did you do it? Like,
well, you know, I love that you said that. You made me so happy because that is exactly what we wanted. We wanted to make, you know, the subtitle is Irresistible Vegan Recipes for Everyone. Yeah. So I wanted to come up with recipes that were so appealing that carnivores would say, yum, I would like to try this. So really, my daughter and I just brainstormed, you know, what would we as people who love to eat animal products love to eat? And so certain things were obvious. You know, we thought about, well, what do we eat that is pretty much vegan or vegetarian? We can make vegan, like we have polenta with heirloom tomato sauce and falafels. Instead of using a yogurt sauce, we make a delicious cashew sauce. But then there were certain things that really pushed me to heights of creativity I would not have gone to. Like when we were writing the book, my family was eating a lot of fish tacos, probably every other week we'd have fish tacos. So I thought, well, what can I use instead? And I came up with these plantain tacos that have this delicious mango lime salsa with a wonderful paste made out of black beans that are delicious and satisfying and exciting. And I wouldn't have thought of it if I didn't give myself that rule.
Hearing you describe them make them sound delicious, I have to say. No, I mean, that sounds great. So let's say that Myra Goodman has her three lessons for everybody listening. What about eating better? And we were just discussing at the break what better means and how it's complicated by different people's perspectives and research and all sorts of stuff. But let's just say better anyway and take its complications. What would eating better look like? What would you hope that people would do? Buying organic, you said, is one over local or even other things because of the environment. But what do you think are easy things for people to change to be more healthful and to help the planet?
Well, for me, so I think organic is really, really important. I love local. I love local organic. I love getting varieties that you really can only buy locally, like a beautiful vine-ripened piece of fruit or heirloom tomato. So I don't want to sound anti-local. But organic to me is the most important because I don't want to worry about chemicals when I eat that delicious food. But the second thing that's really, really important for me is to avoid factory farmed animal products. And And there's a lot of reasons for that. Honestly, like in my heart, it's the inhumanity of it when you see it. It breaks your heart. It's something that I think people should learn about and really be aware of, because I think when you learn about it, it is hard to feel okay about it. But that also has such a huge impact on our environment, factory-farmed animal products. It takes so much water to produce a pound of meat. It takes so much grain. There is so much waste created. There's so many antibiotics used that are making humans resistant to antibiotics. So there's so many problems around the factory-farmed animal system. And then I think, so what happens is people say, well, if I'm not going to eat that, you know, this organic meat or this grass-fed meat is so much more expensive. And that's where I feel like my new book, Straight from the Earth, comes in, because yes, so eat a lot less meat. So if it costs three times as much, eat a third of it, and then eat plant-based foods. Organic beans are not expensive. Organic grains are not expensive. Getting organic produce, especially in season, is a little bit expensive, but really let's spend our money on eating healthy food. I mean, there's a lot of disposable income that goes to other things that I think the wisest choice for our limited budget is to put our money towards eating delicious, healthy food.
That seems like wise wisdom and delicious wisdom. One last piece of advice I'd like, and this is for people who are maybe coming into farming. So many people are interested in going back to the land, for lack of a better phrase, and trying to negotiate, you know, how they contribute better. Here, there's that word again, food. That isn't just exclusive for people who only can afford it. Like, do you have any advice for people who are interested in maybe doing what you did, or starting with some more knowledge perhaps than you had at that time, because there's more to have? We have a lot of people who listen and are interested in producing food. What would you say to them?
Well, you know, you said if people want to contribute and produce food that's more affordable. This might not be the answer that you're interested in, but farming is really hard, and getting good farmland is expensive and it's difficult. You know, and I think a really great way to start, instead of jumping in like Drew and I did, because I think we were really, really lucky, is I think if you live in the city and you get a plot in a community garden, if you live in the suburbs and you have a lawn and you can turn part of that into a garden, what I would say is, in every community, there's people that need help. You know, there's food banks, there's people that need fresh food. And I would say, start growing some food for yourself, and then give some extra to your neighbors, and give some extra to the local people in need. And start small from there, and see if maybe that's enough, or then maybe there's a couple of acres for rent nearby you, or maybe there's an urban lot that you could get together with a group of friends and develop. But my advice would be that if you don't have a huge amount of resources or experience or a really good safety net, to really start small and put one foot in front of the other, because just growing a little bit, just growing one little garden bed, can just change your food and change your outlook on eating and bring so much more flavor and health into your life.
It's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure to listen to you, to get to know you. Everyone should be watching your TEDx Manhattan talk, because I think it touches in some more depth on some of the topics that we just got a hold of for a few minutes. It's really been a pleasure to have you on the show. Next week, Erica Davis, who has created something called the Minority Chef Summit, is going to, which is a global organization trying to elevate the status of minorities in the kitchen, something at the Beard Foundation I know we've been hoping to get a handle on ourselves. And I think it'll be a fascinating conversation for some other ways to make our food system a little bit better for everybody who participates in it. In the meantime, why don't you go to the grocery store, look for that organic USDA label, and buy something that's better for you and the planet. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.